This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of February 2025. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of February. Your readers today are Diana Brooke.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. Now, the main headlines this week: prison criticised for £8,000 fish tank, 20,000 homes for Newtown, and hospitals facing £16 million black hole in finance. So, Diana, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Prison criticised for £8,000 fish tank. Cost comes as squalid conditions persist. Winchester Prison has been criticised for spending almost £8,000 on a fish tank while inmates were kept in poor conditions. The tank was installed in the induction area of His Majesty's Prison, Winchester, in Romsey Road, approximately 2 years ago. It is a room where prisoners only spend time when they arrive. Inmates said the existence of the tank is a joke, as it comes amid complaints of crumbling buildings, rife drug use, and a lack of resources. In response to a Freedom of Information request, the Ministry of Justice confirmed that a fish tank had been installed in the induction area of A Wing in March 2023. At a cost of £7,890 from its budget. It did not disclose how much was spent on fish to populate it, nor how much ongoing upkeep costs. Speaking anonymously to national newspaper The Metro, a former inmate who spent 6 months at the Winchester last year said, "In the induction room, all you do is you give your phone number for who you want to talk to in the outside, and they give you your pack for your bedding, and that. So, you see, that fish tank for 45 minutes, and you never get to see it again." He added that the prison hasn't even got writing materials, saying, "What a joke. I get that it's daunting, your first time in prison, but I don't see what a fish tank is going to do to relieve the distress you're going through." Former magistrate Georgia Swift, who now campaigns on prison conditions, submitted the Freedom of Information request to the Ministry of Justice. She has previously spoken out on Channel 4 about the poor conditions after her husband was sent there. She said, "Staff members were telling me it was unsafe. It's toxic. It's a rotting, festering cesspit." A prison watchdog called for His Majesty's Prison to put into special measures over high levels of violence and drug issues following an inspection last year. The watchdog reported that drug use was rife, but that the prison's approach to testing was weak, and a third of CCTV cameras were broken. The prison, which was built in the mid-19th century, can hold up to 649 male prisoners, was described as unsafe after a visit by His Majesty's Inspector of Prisons in October. The inspection report described the prison as persistently underachieving. Prison reform charity, the Howard League for Penal Reform, called the prison truly squalid. Andrea Coomer, Chief Executive of the Howard League for Penal Reform, said, "This is one of the worst reports in a prison that I have ever read, and the photographs of filthy toilets, broken windows, and mouldy walls tell their own story. This raises important questions about the leadership of the prison, both locally and nationally, and about the government's plans to build more jails when the ones we have are failing so miserably." The Ministry of Justice reassured back in January that an urgent action plan was in place to support the prison and its staff. However, reports of fish tank costs have thrown the prison back into the spotlight. This comes as new data released by accident claim as part of a Freedom of Information request shows that prison staff claims against HMP Winchester have cost more than £1 million since 2019. The most common claims were assaults by prisoners, with 637 submissions, followed by slip, trips and falls, 344 submissions, as well as control and restraint claims, which had 249 submissions. An MOD spokesperson said, "Our jails are overcrowded, have been neglected for too long, and our hard-working staff are overstretched. By addressing this crisis, we can begin to work on improving prisons' conditions to reduce the need for compensation claims and ensure taxpayer money is spent more effectively. The government is investing in prison maintenance and security, and prisoners who are violent towards staff or other prisoners will face the full consequences of their actions." The spokesperson also said that to prevent staff from serious assaults, PAVA, a synthetic pepper spray, is available for use by prison officers, as are next generation bodies worn video cameras.
20,000 homes for New Town. A controversial new town in Hampshire could see up to 20,000 homes built after its developer submitted a revised proposal. Mitchell Devon New Town was previously expected to be the potential site of 6,000 houses on an estate south of the A303, but under the fresh plans might see the construction of over three times that number. The news comes after the Cork-based O'Flynn Group, headed by Michael O'Flynn, teamed up with the Irish billionaire John Magnier to develop the 4,200-acre plot of land in Hampshire, which Mr. Magnier bought in 2017 for a reported €52 million. In an article by the Irish Sunday newspaper, The Business Post, the developers were also quoted praising the potential of cross-boundary synergy with another proposal for 3,000 homes on Popham Airfield. As reported in the Chronicle last week, the developers have submitted their plans to the government's New Towns Task Force. During an event last week held by Property Industry Ireland on the Housing Commission report, Mr. O'Flynn reportedly said that Britain and the Labour government are a breath of fresh air as they are facing up to the fact that there is an undersupply of housing across the country. A spokesperson for Mitchell Devon Station New Town said, "Our submission to the government's New Towns Task Force confirms that the location is able to accommodate upwards of 10,000 homes, this number being the threshold to qualify for submission to the task force. Our proposals can be scaled up to deliver in the region of 15,000 to 20,000 homes should the site be selected. The proposal for 6,000 homes promoted through the local plan process was for a smaller part of the Sutton Scotney estate." The news has forced backlash from campaigners and civic chiefs alike, with Martin Todd, the Lib Dem leader of Winchester City Council, calling the plans not sustainable. He said, "I have been amazed that they haven't submitted it. But just submitting it to the government doesn't make it a through-through plan or a good idea. The Department of Transport and Highways' assessment of its traffic impact was brutal. I'd be surprised if an update assessment wasn't even worse. The New Towns Task Force is expected to submit the final report by summer, and this will include a list of places new towns could potentially be located."
And and our third headline this week is entitled "Hospitals Facing a £16 million Black Hole in Finances." After a new report revealed a year-to-date deficit of nearly £16 million, the latest figures discussed at the Trust's Board of Directors meeting on January the 30th reveal that while December's deficit of £1.1 million was in line with the revised monthly plan, the result was buoyed by exceptional items worth £3.3 million. Without these one-off gains, the deficit would have widened to £4.5 million. The year-to-date position is now a deficit of £15.9 million, leaving the Trust £10.6 million adrift from the planned deficit of £5.3 million. Staffing costs remain the single biggest contributor to the Trust's financial woes. December saw an adverse variance of £2.1 million for pay, with year-to-date overspending reaching £11.5 million. The Trust's workforce has now grown to 7,750 full-time equivalents. That's a record high and 3% higher than December 2023. Temporary medical staffing, deployed to manage unrelenting pressures in urgent and emergency care, is the driver for these increased costs. With no signs of a slowdown in activity, the upward trend in workforce spending is raising alarm bells. Drug and clinical supply costs also continue to exceed expectations. While income offsets some of these costs, long-term condition treatments now fall under block contract funding, leaving the Trust to shoulder the financial risk of overperformance. According to the report, drug costs continue to track higher than plan, and where the specific drug is genuine pass-through, additional income has been recognised. However, many of the drugs for long-term conditions are now part of the block element of the contract, and the risk of overperformance sits with the Trust. The Trust's cash reserves have dropped by £8.3 million to £18.7 million, which is, quote, slightly better than the forecast, end quote. With current projections indicating the need for additional cash support as early as February, the Trust is preparing a case to secure funding for the next financial year. The Trust confirmed to the Chronicle that it's not yet applied for any cash support and does not expect to need additional cash support in February or March. Capital expenditure has also fallen behind, with December's £5.3 million spend bringing the year-to-date shortfall to £24 million. And this article is accompanied by a picture of the front of our wonderful RHCH.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death announcements. And Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements this week. Braddock, Margaret Elizabeth Braddock, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 81. Collinson, Christine Collinson, died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 8th of February, aged 84. Crowther, Betty Crowther, died peacefully at home on the 5th of February, aged 97. Dalton, June Barbara Dalton, née Day, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 91. Hayes, Doreen May Hayes, died peacefully at Basingstoke Hospital on the 13th of February, aged 78. Holland, Joan Mary Holland, née Hoare, died on the 7th of February, aged 76. Oliver, Michael James Oliver, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 85. Peg, Deirdre Jocelyn Peg, died peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 88. Pemberton, David Pemberton, died on the 6th of February, aged 87. Power, Michael James Power, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 74. Proctor, Eileen Joan Proctor, died peacefully at Winchester Hospice, aged 85. Proudfoot, Thomas Simon Proudfoot, died at home in Alresford after a short illness. Salter, Jane Salter, died on the 14th of February. Van der Steen, William Albert Van der Steen, died at Winchester Hospice, aged 93. Ward, Frank Ward, died peacefully on the 20th of January, aged 89. Whiteear, Anthony John Whiteear, died peacefully on the 7th of February, aged 86. Vibers, Maria Vibers, known as Mitzi, died on the 7th of February, aged 94. Wright, Colin Stephen Wright, died peacefully at home on the 3rd of February, aged 68. That concludes the death announcements. Andrew, I think you've got a Christian comment for us, please.
And this week's Christian comment is written by Nigel Hemming, who's the senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church. And it's entitled, Why It's Better to Give Than to Receive. Several years ago, we ran a community car wash at our church, welcoming guests inside for tea and cake while the washing team got to work in the car park. Winchester Vineyard meets in a converted warehouse on an industrial estate, and first-time visitors are usually surprised about how far back the building stretches. One memorable question came from a guest who commented on the amazing space and asked, Are you government-funded? Suppressing a smile, I told him that our church is almost entirely funded by the incredible generosity of our congregation, with a little help from the mortgage company. The Old Testament describes a principle called tithing, where the law instructs God's people to give away the first 10% of their produce to facilitate community worship and provide for the poor. Tithing makes a lot of sense in an ancient agricultural community, and even in the modern era, many believers continue to follow this principle of choosing to give up to 10% of their income to the church. But while 10% is a helpful guide and a good starting point, I believe the New Testament goes significantly further. Rather than highlighting a figure, Jesus in Acts 20 instead teaches that it is more blessed to give than to receive. The Greek word here for blessed could also be translated as happy, fortunate, or well off. Rather than simply being the morally right thing to do, Jesus teaches that generosity is an essential key to true happiness, and modern-day research would very much back him up. Social science has shown that generous people are happier and healthier, with lower levels of depression and anxiety, better relationships, and a higher life expectancy. According to one study, generous people literally laugh more, and this is true across every demographic, no matter someone's socioeconomic status, age, gender, ethnicity, or personality. A different study cites the link between generosity and happiness as a universal feature of human psychology. When we view God as Father, when we view God as Father and Provider, we cultivate a mindset of abundance, and all of life becomes a gift, lived with gratitude for Jesus' sacrificial generosity in laying down his own life. The alternative is a scarcity mindset, where we become consumed with fear and greed and fight to keep what we have and look out for ourselves. In another well-known Bible passage, Jesus encourages his followers to store up treasures in heaven rather than on earth. He's not talking about heaven as the place you might go when you die, but instead, he's describing a choice to invest in activities and people in line with God's kingdom vision, values, and activities. The alternative is to invest in your own stuff, money and possessions which will only ultimately gather dust or be destroyed by moths and rust. See Matthew 6. Interestingly, rather than rebuking the human desire to store up treasure, Jesus simply redirects it, inviting us to choose carefully where our passions and ultimately our values lie. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Diana, you've got the first, I think.
This letter is entitled Low Impact. Read the article on page 18 of the Chronicle, Thursday, February the 6th, entitled County Cuts 4.5 million as 350 staff quit. Councillors are Stuart Ashley, the Director of Children's Services, and Patrick Blogg, Director of Universal Services, what impact the redundancies would have on the services and the remaining staff, who may feel the need to move to alternative employment due to added pressures. Mr. Blogg stated, absolutely not. Mr. Ashley stated that 85 applications had been approved for paid redundancy, though their leaving would not have any detrimental impact on our capacity or in the safeguarding of our children. Based on an average on cost of, say, £40,000 per employee, multiplied by the 85 employees mentioned, would result in a saving of £3.4 million. Would these gentlemen explain how these losses would not have any impact, and if so, why were they employed in the first place? This letter is written by Julian Perkins of Winchester.
A costly visit. I visited Winchester some weeks ago on a Sunday to take my daughter to a dance competition. In horrid weather, I went the wrong way and turned round in the near-deserted railway station. When I finally got to the car park, I was astonished that I had to part with £18 to stop there for more than 4 hours. Days later, I received two identical letters from Hampshire County Council demanding money because I had turned round in the railway station. I attempted to clarify what I had done wrong, but it remains unclear. It seems I must have missed a sign. I duly sent off £35 for the fine rose to, before the fine rose to £70. Winchester ought to be encouraging visitors rather than doing their utmost to deter them. I will only return again if I absolutely have to, and I used to be a regular visitor. And that was from Ed Baker, Poole Road, Upton, Dorset.
And this letter is entitled Trump Babbling. Mr. Trump's ludicrous babbling is just his technique to destabilize everyone. Chronicle, February the 20th. We should greet each utterance with the disdain with which it is delivered. He seems to be heading towards a peace deal that smacks of surrender. But would Congress allow him to do a deal which makes America look weak, foolish, and impotent? He is not constrained by issues of truth or falsehood. Most people in Europe do not know that the American Bible does not have 10 commandments. It only has 9. The edict against bearing false witness has been expunged by the First Amendment, which guarantees free speech. In effect, this means that lying in the USA is protected by federal law. American media, including newspapers, radio, TV, social media, etc., etc., is therefore under no obligation to tell the truth. Mr. Trump is wrong when he declares that Europe does not pay enough for its defense. He does not understand, or chooses not to understand, that Europe pays billions to the USA every year in the form of tax breaks to the big American companies that trade here, in return for American protection. If Trump is going to renege on the deal, We need to stop this hemorrhage and devote the money to our defence. And this is from Roger Stevens, Cliffway, Compton, Winchester.
This letter is entitled No Litter. I have just driven from Warsaw, Poland, to Kyiv, Ukraine, a distance of 460 miles, then back. On the journey, I hardly saw any roadside litter. There is national pride in appearance. The contrast to the roads around Winchester, and especially Spitfire Roundabout, including discarded council road signs and traffic cones, makes me feel ashamed. And we are not even in a war zone. What are our local authorities doing about it? Charles Blackmore, Exton.
Why were bridge defects unknown? Network Rail's statement that significant defects were found in the St Paul's Bridge parapet walls justify the protracted saga of replacing railings on St Paul's Bridge, Chronicle Thursday, February the 20th, begs really important question. Why were these defects unknown to this point? Does Network Rail not audit such things, not least over a bridge carrying cars and pedestrians that spans one of the busiest UK main line rail arteries, ferrying hundreds of trains a day and thousands of passengers under its apparently long defective structure? We come to take it as normal the abysmally low standards offered by Network Rail. Passenger safety, the faded pedestrian crossing at Winchester Station car park, which cars routinely drive over, and the alternative footpath, which is too narrow in parts for cars to avoid crossing over. Not to mention the dangerous and narrow footpath on Stockbridge Road under Winchester Station, the main alternative route, while St Paul's Bridge has been closed. And that was from Nick Ray of Fordington Avenue, Fulford, Winchester.
And the next letter is entitled Car Gimmicks and is submitted by Tony Gaster. And I, as an editorial comment here, I can relate to this one because my car does the same thing. I wonder why safety and common sense is so far down the list for some car manufacturers. Today, it seems gimmicks rule. For example, my car has emergency braking assist, which has been applied wrongly several times. Neither the manufacturer or dealer could solve the problem. A modern dashboard seems full of gimmicks when actually, for safety, the fewer the better. My car handbook is over 300 pages. Just imagine reading all of that. I have a Nissan and my wife a Ford, and nearly every control is in a different place. Couldn't the manufacturers get together and standardise? When you need to action something quickly, it's vital to know the position of every control. This is a modern problem because years ago, I would hire a car in an unknown US airport and drive in the dark to my hotel without any issues. Judging by today's driving, I'm not alone. And as we said, this is from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Winchester.
Yeah. That concludes the letters. Now we move on to the editorial comment, please, Diana.
Right. This editorial comment, time to wake up to conditions at prison. Should we, the normal law-abiding residents of Winchester and its surrounding villages, really care about what is going on behind the great big stone walls at HMP Winchester? In reality, even if you have criminals in your family or within your circle of friends, what's the chance of them landing up at that particular institution anyway? Pretty slim. For the past few years, the Chronicle has been reporting on happenings up the hill, inspections, deaths. We ran a report on prisoners saying it was freezing there. We reported on grieving parents and lots more. Today, we run a report on the cost of a fish tank, revealed against a backdrop of mould, crumbling walls, defective CCTV and unsafe conditions. pictures published last year in an inspection report show windows hanging off, toilets thick with brown. Each time we run a story, it's met with the hard line, they're prisoners and they get what they deserve, or it's not a holiday camp. Most residents of Winchester don't even know someone there. If you discount the staff, so why should they care? Imprisonment is meant to serve as a punishment, but it should not strip people of their dignity or basic human rights. We have not just a legal requirement to treat prisoners humanely, but a moral and ethical obligation. Regardless of their crimes, prisoners are still human beings. Harsh or inhumane conditions often lead to further criminal behaviour, while humane treatment supports rehabilitation. Some argue that when prisoners are treated with dignity, they are more likely to return to society as law-abiding citizens rather than reoffending due to trauma or bitterness. While imprisonment is meant to serve as punishment, it should not strip individuals of their dignity or basic human rights. Ensuring humane conditions benefits not just the prisoners, but also society as a whole. That's why we, as Winchester residents, really should start to care about what is going on right here on our doorstep, even if there are some great big stone walls separating us.
Thank you. Now we have first person, please, Norma.
And this is entitled, Donald, What Is He Like? And this is by Khalid Aziz. They laughed when I said I wanted to be a comedian. They're not laughing now. A version of the famous quote from the much-missed Bob Monkhouse came back to haunt me when on a trip to the US in 2016. An American friend warned me not to be so sure about the vulgarian Donald Trump, not having a hope in hell of getting elected president. Within a few months, veteran actress and longtime Hillary Clinton flag waver Candice Bergen was on a talk show sporting sweaters emblazoned Free Melania. That crumb of humour was all that could be summoned up from what most saw as a disaster. Now he's back for another go. And how? We've just returned from a stunning fortnight in Namibia, escaping the bone-chilling cold, wet and grey British February. It's a country that just over 3 million in land mass, so vast that after Mongolia, it's the second most sparsely populated country in the world. Granted independence from South Africa just 35 years ago, it shares many challenges with other nascent African countries, chiefly a youthful population and soaring unemployment approaching 50%. What it doesn't have in common with its continental neighbours is filth and squalor. Even in the capital, Windhoek, Namibians seem to have the sense of pride and cleanliness that I envy for Hampshire. As I follow yet another car on the A34, chucking out their used McDonald's wrappings, other junk food wrappers are available, to drifting on the breeze, polluting our green and pleasant verges. Namibia manages its wildlife better too, compared to, say, Kenya, where we were shocked by the animal depopulation compared with our first visit over 30 years ago. Safari drives in the dusty Namibian desert still sport drifts of antelope, including springbok, impala, and the charming little stemboks and dikdiks. Giraffes roam in numbers, with herds sometimes reaching over 30. We saw plenty of zebra, elephant and lions too. The trip culminated in a breathtaking encounter with a 15-year-old male leopard, one of over 20 in the huge private reserve dedicated to conservation. You haven't lived until you've had eye contact with such a magnificent beast just 2 feet away from you. The words humbling and thrilling don't quite cover it. Thanks to our ever-connected world, we couldn't avoid the news. 2 days after we landed, the country was thrown into extended mourning following the death of Sam Nujoma, founding president of Namibia, who died at the age of 95. He had left the Southwest Africa People Organization, SWAPO, against South African apartheid and had trodden the well-worn evolutionary path from terrorist to freedom fighter to national hero to president to elder statesman, embracing violence and torture against enemies of the party, cuddling up to a dubious Marxist regimes in his journey. With death comes reverence, with his body being transported around Namibia for a series of memorial services. The mourning will continue until Saturday, when he will be buried. It got me thinking about whether the Donald will receive the same treatment when he eventually goes. Witnessing his appalling treatment of Volodymyr Zelensky, apparently the Ukrainian leader started the war, who knew? I should imagine that if the people turn up to Trump's funeral, it will be to check that he's actually dead. His mendacious insults cannot be explained away by his cheerleaders insisting he doesn't really mean what he says. That might work for a petulant toddler or teenager, but surely cannot be applied to the alleged leader of the free world. Oh, that Donald, what's he like? Returning home, I can only seek solace from the philosophy of my Sufi ancestors. In Persian scripts can be found the phrase, "This too will pass." I wish I could be so sure. 4 years seems an awfully long time. Meanwhile, we must channel our inner Churchill, summed up by the acronym KBO. Look it up.
Now we have a couple of items from Belgarum, please, Andrew.
And I was going to say now for something completely different.
Yes.
The first one is accompanied by two photographs, and I'll explain the photographs later, but it's called Rescued Barn Owl on the Mend. A barn owl rescued from Brown Candover near Alsford is making a great recovery. Hart Wildlife Rescue found a barn owl grounded in a field on February the 12th, and it was taken into their care. He was muddy and dishevelled and required careful cleaning by the team. He was underweight on admissions to HART, but had no obvious injuries. Now, on Thursday, February the 20th, Hart Wildlife Rescue gave an update on the barn owl, and he's made a great recovery. And the spokesperson for Hart Wildlife Rescue said, "As you can see, the barn owl rescued by our team has made great progress. And since this photo was taken, he started self-feeding, so he has been moved to one of our large flight aviaries. We are all really pleased to see him looking so much better. Hart Wildlife Rescue does amazing work across Hampshire, and you can find out more on their website. And if you'd like to support their work rehabilitating British wildlife, then you can consider purchasing items off their Amazon wish list." Now, the really amazing thing are the two photographs. So the first photograph is a picture of the barn owl when it was brought in. And it really does look a very sad, sad creature. It's all dishevelled. Its feathers are all dirty and muddy, etc., etc. But I think more interestingly, its eyes are all sunk into its head. I mean, it looks really quite tragic. There's a picture then taken, which is only 8 days later. And it's obviously all been cleaned up and its feathers have been cleaned up, but its eyes are just totally different. The transformation in 8 days is absolutely phenomenal. So well done, HART. They did a phenomenal job. The second article is entitled "Art Deco Beauty is Preserved." And a few years ago, after Debenhams closed, Belgarm raised the issue of the future of its beautiful Art Deco windows that line the High Street in Winchester. When it was announced that three restaurants would go into the large space, there was trepidation that the intricate glass and metalwork in the windows might be removed and replaced by soulless fronts. So Belgarum is pleased to say that the windows have been preserved by Nando's and the Five Guys, and with the third, Pizza Express, being inspired for the rest of the window display, a kind of 1920s design in parallel gold lines. Hats off to Pizza Express and the others for working with something of beauty instead of trying to impose its corporate image. And that's accompanied by a photograph of the Pizza Express, which has recently opened in one of the Debenhams, or part of the Debenhams building.
Thank you. Now we move on to announcements. Excuse me. We start with what's on. The first item, rather than what's on, is actually it's a road closure, which may be of interest to everybody. It's a road closure for Andover Road North between Hairstock Road and the slip road leading to Hairstock Close. So it's only a short section, and it's for gas main replacement. Excuse me. There will be diversions, but it's for 21 weeks, 24 hours a day, from next Monday, the 3rd of March. Diversions will be via Hairstock Road and Stockbridge Road. But that's quite an important closure. Verdi's Requiem will be at the Winchester Cathedral on the Friday, April the 4th at 7:30. And the concert features the Wainfleet Singers, the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, and members of the Bournemouth Symphony Chorus. The concert will be conducted by Andrew Lumsden, former director of music at the cathedral, who has a deep understanding of the building's acoustics. To enhance the viewing experience, the cathedral's video screens will be used, with camera work ensuring a good view for all audience members. Tickets are available on the Winchester Cathedral website. There's a folk singer, dubbed the Godfather of Folk Rock by Bob Dylan, will perform at St Mary's Church, Twyford, at 7:30 p.m. on Wednesday the 26th of March. His name's Ashley Hutchings, and he was the founder of Fairport Convention in 1967, and then heavily involved with the setting up of Steel Eye Span. Tickets are £22, and can be got from www.ents24.com. That's ents24.com. Best-selling author Kate Moss will perform her one-woman show at the Theatre Royal on Saturday, March the 8th. She will offer a unique perspective of the creation of her best-selling book Labyrinth, which is part of the Languedoc trilogy. You can get tickets and more information from the box office of the Theatre Royal. It's 01962 840 440. And the final item is a puppet show for children called There's a Monster in Your Show, based on the book by Tom Fletcher. And that'll be performed at the Theatre Royal on March the 6th at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m, so two matinees for that one, and March the 7th at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. Again, more information can be got from the Theatre Royal box office on 01962 840 440. Lighting up time ends Friday the 28th of February at 6:53 a.m. and begins at 5:44 p.m. On Wednesday the 5th of March, it ends at 6:42 a.m. and begins at 5:52 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. And that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Diana.
Volunteers awarded medal from the King. 57 Cadet Force adult volunteers have been awarded the King's Coronation Medal. The presentation was conducted by the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson. The King Charles III Coronation Medal is a commemorative honour created to mark the coronation of His Majesty King Charles III and his consort, Her Majesty Queen Camilla, on May 6, 2023. More than 400,000 coronation medals have been issued across the UK to individuals who contributed to the coronation, recipients of the UK's highest honours, and select British military personnel, frontline emergency workers, and public prison staff with 5 years of service. Among the recipients was Captain Chris Hargrave of Normandy Company. He said, "Receiving the King's coronation medal is a truly special moment. I am incredibly thankful for this honour and for the journey within the Army Cadet Force that has brought me here. Being able to present the King's coronation medal to those qualifying alongside the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire on a parade is one way to show our gratitude and give our officers and instructors the recognition they deserve." The Army Cadets is a youth organisation sponsored by the Ministry of Defence.
4 decades of Age Concern. Age Concern Hampshire has celebrated its 40th anniversary of helping older adults. The charity marked the occasion by launching the Ruby Anniversary celebrations at Petersfield Hospital. It shared the event with one of its patients, Ruby, who celebrated her 100th birthday. The charity says this created a meaningful connection to the Ruby theme. The occasion highlighted the invaluable support provided by Age Concern Hampshire in ensuring older people receive the care and the assistance they need. The charity operates in partnership with the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Healthcare NHS Foundation Trust. It offers a hospital-to-home service which aims to support older adults during their hospital stay, offering tailored guidance and help for a smooth discharge. This service helps to reduce the hospital readmissions and supports older adults in regaining their independence. Age Concern Hampshire plans to host various events throughout the year to celebrate its 40-year milestone, bringing together service users, volunteers, supporters, and the wider community. These will include fundraising activities, awareness campaigns, and celebratory gatherings, all aimed at recognising the contributions of those who have helped the charity over the decades.
Reflections of Home by International Students. A University of Winchester student has created an anthology of writing about home and belonging. The collection, called Home Away, was edited by 23-year-old Georgiana Lopata from Romania. The anthology, available online, comprises fiction, poetry, reminiscences, think pieces, and photography by fellow international students. It was created as part of the Writer and Community module in Georgiana's master's course in creative writing. Georgiana said, "I thought, what could I create as a contribution to the community that would also benefit the people involved and leave them feeling they had achieved something?" She invited students to attend workshops where they reflected on what and where home was for them and how they coped with living in a foreign country. The workshops inspired contributions from students from the US, Canada, Bulgaria, Madeira, Tanzania, and Romania. Georgiana said, "I have really enjoyed the editing process. I had a great response and was very impressed by the quality of submissions. Some of the contributors have never seen their name and work in print, and I hope they keep on writing." Georgiana has lived in the UK for 5 years, and having completed a BA in creative writing and English literature at Winchester prior to her master's. However, she often thinks of her homeland, which is the subject of her own contribution, Wild Heart, about a girl growing up in Transylvania, Romania, and it also serves as the setting for a mystery thriller novel that she's writing for her dissertation. Reflecting on the anthology, Judith Hennigan, module tutor and program leader for the MA Creative Writing course, said, "The writer and community module encourages students to engage with a community of their choice and produce creative writing that reflects and showcases that community. Georgiana's anthology brings people together and celebrates the power of words. It's a wonderful example of community-focused project with benefits for all concerned." Among contributions is a poem entitled Thoughts Before Moving by AHM, which explores the dilemma of moving home. And we quote, "How can I leave knowing everything I've ever known is behind? How can I stay knowing everything I've ever dreamed of is ahead?" And interesting thoughts.
Innovative approach to children's mental health. A symposium has highlighted the innovative approach of a charity to improving children's mental health. The event, organised by Dr. Rhiannon Love, co-lead of the University of Winchester's Centre for Research into Educational Action and Theory Exchange, CREATE, was held on Thursday, February the 6th, to coincide with Children's Mental Health Week. The symposium, entitled Breaking the Storm, explored the current challenge to children's mental health and highlighted one charity, Stormbreak's, innovative approach to improving young people's well-being. It featured presentations about the charity's work, which aims to embed healthy, purposeful movement sessions into the primary school day. Claire Hannah Russell, a research psychologist and trustee of Stormbreak, highlighted that 500 children a day in the UK are referred to mental health services for anxiety and other problems. At the same time, today's children are moving less than ever before. Stormbreak believes daily 15-minute sessions, Stormbreaks, of healthy, purposeful movement promote happiness and can help children build resilience to help themselves cope with the stress of modern life. The charity is working with schools to incorporate Stormbreak sessions into the daily timetable and to train staff on how to implement the workouts.
Outrage over rising water bills amid pollution. Southern Water has provoked outrage after bidding to increase householders' bills at the same time we can reveal that it has poured sewage overflows into the river for 1,500 hours. The beleaguered utility firm has already been given permission by the regulator Ofwat to increase bills by 47% over the next 5 years, but it's now appealing that decision as it has wanted a 91% increase. CEO Lawrence Godson said the company cannot deliver the environmental and performance improvements and new infrastructure without the money. But Southampton Itchen MP Darren Paffy has accused the company of treating customers like a cash cow. He said, "Given the levels of sewage we continue to see being dumped into the River Itchen, it's outrageous that Southern Water is looking to hike up charges to bill payers. Following years of underinvestment in our water system by water companies, it is simply wrong that my constituents are expected to pick up the bill. Southern Water have a plan agreed with the regulator. They should, at a minimum, adhere to this. People in Southampton deserve clean rivers, not a system that prioritises profit over public health. Bill payers will be rightly outraged after years of growing costs and seeing little investment in local infrastructure. Southern Water are now treating customers like a cash cow. These improvements should have been happening as part of their ongoing commitment to Southampton."
Library of the Year Award hope. Winchester Library in Jury Street is a finalist in the British Book Awards 2025 Library of the Year. The Book Awards celebrate reading initiatives in which the libraries collaborate with local publishers, partners and businesses, and build community hubs and more. The award recognises individual libraries and work done across library districts. Winchester Library, located inside Winchester Arc, is one of 36 libraries and library authorities nationwide that are competing for the award. Councillor Steve Foster, Executive Member for Libraries at Hampshire County Council, said, "We are incredibly proud of Winchester Library for being selected as a regional and country finalist for the Library of the Year Award. This recognition highlights the dedication and innovation of our team, particularly Library Team Assistant Rebecca Ledley, who, on her own initiative, set up the Read Aloud program, which has formed a key part of the recognition. This initiative has not only fostered a love for reading, but has also created an inclusive environment for all of the library by facilitating sessions specifically for learning disability charity, Winchester GOLD. The positive feedback from members is a testament to the program's success. We extend our heartfelt thanks to Rebecca and the entire Winchester Library team for their outstanding work. Their efforts have inspired other libraries around the country to adopt similar initiatives."
Business Support Group celebrates anniversary. A Winchester woman is celebrating the anniversary of her community group for Hampshire Business Women. Trudy Simmons, 50, set up the online group in February 2017 to provide a safe space for local businesswomen to connect, ask questions, and receive advice and support. Trudy said, "I launched the group back in February 2017, and today there are over 1,900 members. We offer support and networking for women in business, and it's a community where members help each other share their experiences." Trudy was inspired to start the group after experiencing burnout in her previous career and early on in her business, which left her feeling isolated. She said, "Having the online community during the pandemic was so important and helped a huge number of businesswomen to overcome their feelings of isolation and to find the motivation and support to keep going. In addition to the online community group, which is hosted on Facebook, Trudy organises online and in-person networking meetings. These meetings provide a platform for local businesswomen to connect, share their journeys and grow their audiences. She said, "It's a place where they can come and be themselves and chat and laugh and get to know each other. I'm incredibly proud of what we've created, and running this group really does bring me so much joy. Networking really is the quickest and simplest way to grow your business, grow your confidence, and grow your audience of potential new customers. Outside of local networking, Trudy is also the founder of coaching company, the Daisy Chain Group, and a business mentor, speaker, author and procrastination business coach, working with hundreds of clients all over the world." She said, "I help women entrepreneurs to know their potential, grow their confidence and create visibility. I do this by working with them to find what they want to do, why they want to do it and how to get it done. From working with me, my clients find the motivation, encouragement and support that we all need to smash the glass ceiling and create happy businesses." She is also the author of the best-selling book, Doubt Less, Do More, where she shares how we can break free from self-doubt and embrace our full potential. It is a step-by-step guide to doubt yourself less and do more of what you want to do for yourself and for your business.
Council call for greener advertising. A motion has been made to modify the County Council's policy to prevent advertising high-carbon products. The Green Party councillor, Malcolm Wallace, presented a motion to the full council on February the 13th, urging the council to review its advertising policy to add goods or services that contradict Hampshire's climate change strategy to the list of specific categories of organisations, products or services which may not advertise or be advertised by the organisation. Hampshire County Council declared a climate emergency in June 2019. Since then, climate change has been embedded across the County Council services, influencing how decisions are made and policies are delivered. In October 2022, the UK House of Lords published the In Our Hands report, which states that one-third of emissions reductions required by 2035 have come from changing how we travel, what we eat, and how we heat our homes. The role of advertising was mentioned in the report as a powerful influence on consumer behaviour on a large scale. With the motion, Councillor Wallace aimed to make it explicit that promoting goods or services that contradict the Council's climate change strategy, such as promoting fossil fuels, is prohibited from advertising with the Council.
Students gained valuable experience at the BOAS project. Two social work students are gaining valuable experience during their 70-day placement at the BOAS project. Mature students Dorothy Poku and Yvonne Adade, both studying for their masters in social work at the University of Winchester, are combining social work theory with hands-on practical experience at the farm-based charity, which supports adults with learning disabilities and autism. The duo spend 4 days a week at BOAS in Sutton Scotney and developing the skills and experience needed for their future careers. Dorothy, a mother of two, switched to social work after a decade-long career in corporate banking. And she said, "I found myself doing some informal counselling of young people at my church. I have a passion for listening to people. I wondered if I could do it more professionally." Her placement at BOAS has helped her hone her listening skills. And she said, "The most rewarding moments are when I engage with someone who is not very vocal and can get them involved in activities." Yvonne Adade, who is also a mother of two, was inspired by her mother's charity work with children in Ghana, and she quit her job in office administration. She said, "I want to make a difference." And despite her phobia of chickens, Yvonne has enjoyed the variety of activities at BOAS. She said, "I am so scared of chickens. During my first session, I had to feed the hens." Both students have found great value in the nature-based activities. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Dorothy and Yvonne working with some of the, gaining some experience, and I think it looks like a greenhouse there that they're working in at the BOAS project.
Chance for parents to pick up a bargain. Parents and expecting parents will be able to snap up a few bargains as the nearly new kids sale returns to Winchester. The National Childbirth Trust, NCT Winchester and District, will be holding its popular nearly new sale at Badger Farm Community Centre, Winchester. A proportion of the income generated from selling items goes directly to the local NCT branch and helps the charity to support parents, fund helplines and offer local services such as baby first aid courses, breastfeeding support, a reusable nappy library and baby bundles for local parents in need. The spokesperson said, "Nearly new sales are a fantastic opportunity for buyers to pick up excellent quality controlled, nearly new baby and child clothing and equipment at fantastic prices. At the last sale, more than 5,000 items were up for grabs. It's definitely not like a jumble sale. It's cashless, and there are even tills at the exit to pay for shopping altogether, just like the high street shop. Anyone can sell at the sale. Sellers are charged a small registration fee and communication for having goods sold for them by the local volunteer team. Sellers price and label all items at home and drop them off at the start of the day of the sale. Any unsold items are collected after the sale has ended. The sale is run entirely by helpers, a small organising committee and a large team of 40 on-the-day volunteers work together to set up the event. The sale takes place at Badger Farm Community Centre, Winchester, on Sunday, May the 11th at 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. The event has been sponsored by Two Spot Ceramics, Baby Squids, Dibbles Estate Agents, the Breaker Collective and the National and the Natal, sorry, the Natal Clinic. And there's a lovely picture here of many young mums waiting for this great sale.
Floggett Antiques Expert set to host free valuation day. Television antiques expert Paul Martin will be offering free valuations to people in Winchester. The Floggett star will be at the Westgate in Winchester on Thursday, March the 6th, to host a community valuation day. The event will run from 10:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. and will give people the chance to find out the value of any items that they have been wondering about. The valuation day is being held in partnership with Henry Aldridge and Son, the auctioneers for which Paul is head of valuations. People are encouraged to bring along any items they are keen to know more about, including antiques, collectibles, silver, gold, militaria and jewellery. These items will be discussed, valued and may even be put up for sale. Paul said, "Winchester is an impressive city with an expansive history, and I'm always intrigued by the amazing items that turned up at these events. But it's not all about the items, it's about the community and sharing our local histories too. Winchester is a cathedral city known for being the ancient capital of England and former seat of King Alfred the Great. The city is steeped in history and culture, surrounding by villages and the South Downs National Park." And there is a picture of Paul Martin holding up a dolphin. It's obviously, I don't know whether it's metal. It looks as though it could be a metal dolphin. Rather charming, actually.
Apprentices vital in the future of healthcare. Employers from various sectors attended a special health and well-being apprenticeship event at the University of Winchester. The event, during National Apprenticeship Week, which is February the 10th to the 16th, saw representatives from the acute, community, social care, primary care, and voluntary sectors gather to discuss the future of healthcare apprenticeships. The audience at the West Downs Centre was informed about the growing importance of investing in an apprenticeship workforce pipeline to meet the nation's healthcare needs. Apprenticeships are set to play an increasingly significant role in the training of healthcare professionals. In her presentation, Claire Wardle, Health and Care Support Workforce Education Senior Specialist at NHS England, said that the NHS Long-Term Workforce Plan aims to have 22% of all training for clinical staff through apprenticeship routes by 2031-32, up from just 7% today. "We aim to nurture a sustainable supply of students from a range of backgrounds and experiences who study, train and work locally, ensuring that our community continues to thrive." Among the speakers was Dr. Heather Bauer, who's head of education at the Royal College of Midwives. She played a key role in developing the university's midwifery program, which includes a midwifery degree apprenticeship. The event also saw attendance from representatives of several of the university's partner colleges, as Winchester aims to foster closer links between its partner colleges and local employers to strengthen the progression pathway from college to employment and training for the next generation. These include Sophie Charney, who's a midwifery degree apprentice employed by Portsmouth Hospital's University NHS Trust, who says her 6 years working as maternity support alongside empowering and inspirational midwives spurred her on to become a midwife herself. And the article is accompanied by a couple of photographs. So there's one in which a senior nurse, I would imagine, is instructing a group of the young apprentices on some of the basic elements of dealing with a patient in a hospital bed. And then there's another shot of Dr. Heather Bauer, head of education at the Royal College of Midwives, and she's giving a presentation on benefits and barriers.
All dressed up for Jane Austen experience. People are being invited to learn more about Jane Austen and her Hampshire links on guided tours. Winchester-based Experience Hampshire has joined forces with Hampshire Cultural Trust to offer a unique opportunity to help celebrate the 250th anniversary of Jane Austen's birth. Chief Experience Officer and co-founder of Experience Hampshire said, "As custodians of many of Hampshire's historical treasures, Hampshire Cultural Trust has an amazing collection of antique and replica clothing, including much from the Regency period. This private experience for six people gives an opportunity to spend time with an expert to learn more about the clothing from this time in history when Jane Austen was living and writing in the north of the county." He continued, "This is a very special experience and perfect as a birthday treat. It includes a light lunch and the chance to try on some of the replica clothing." The photograph here shows six lovely young ladies who are actually wearing the replicas of this lovely clothing of the period.
MP visits garden that boosts mental health. A beautiful garden space created to inspire, educate and support the work of Andover Mine welcomed visiting MP to its grounds. Garden for Mind at Longstock Park Nursery on the Leckford Estate is an innovative project created by Andover Mind, Simply Health and John Lewis Partnership. Winchester MP Danny Chambers visited the Garden Mind last week to see how it works and to hear about the benefit it brings to users. Based at the Leckford Farm Shop site, Garden for Mind took a vacant piece of land and transformed it into a vibrant outdoor space that now provides opportunities to support mental health and educate people about climate change and biodiversity. Representatives of Andover Mind and Simply Health showed Mr. Chambers around, explaining how spending time in nature can benefit mental and physical well-being and has been found to help with mental health problems such as anxiety and depression. The garden was set up with the support of JLP Golden Jubilee Trust, Leckford Estate, and with John Lewis Partnership, Libby Hilling's Vision. Libby joined for 6 months secondment, working to secure funding, labour and materials to create the space. Having provided the financial foundation for this project and now a regular stream of volunteers, we're looking forward to the garden growing and helping many more people in our local community. And there are a couple of pictures of the new garden. It's a bit bare at the moment because obviously things haven't come into flower yet, and there is a sectioned off area with a covered raised beds, which I think in our weather is very necessary, and the banner for Garden for Mind. And then there's another picture of them standing around chatting, and it says, The Garden for Mind is an inspirational new project supporting education, health and well-being on a previously unused piece of land. It's great to see new ways to support mental health. And that was by Danny Chambers, MP.
The church, or a church, celebrates its £250,000 new roof. A Hampshire church is celebrating the completion of a long-awaited re-roofing project. Thanks to grant funding and the help of the community, St. Nicholas Church in Bishop Sutton is now fully restored and ready to serve future generations. Villagers raised £50,000 through events and personal donations to help preserve the Norman church. During the works, more than 100 villagers wrote personal messages on the underside of the handmade roof tiles. These messages will offer a glimpse into today's community for those who find them when the roof tiles may next need to be replaced, probably a century from now. The Reverend Amber Beresford for St. Nicholas Church said, "This essential project would not have been possible without the dedication and generosity of so many in the village of Bishop Sutton." St. Nicholas Church, one of the oldest churches in Hampshire, dates back to the 12th century, and it retains many original Norman features. The need for a new roof was identified during a regular inspection 2 years ago. To mark the completion of the project, the church will host two events. The first, on Sunday, March the 1st at 6 p.m, will be a short concert inside the church, raising funds for Blood Cancer UK. This will be followed on Sunday the 2nd of March with a service of thanksgiving and celebration for the new roof. And the article is accompanied by a photograph of the church with its brand new red tiled roof, looking in the sunshine really quite spectacular.
Daisy's Walk of Stars will help wishes come true. An influencer is hoping to inspire others and raise funds for a cause close to her heart by walking from Southampton to Winchester. On Thursday, April the 3rd, local influencer Daisy Harris-Reed, who has thousands of followers on her Instagram account, at @mum_abouttown, will embark on an inspiring journey in support of terminally ill children. Daisy from Chandler's Ford is taking part in the Daisy Walk of Stars from Southampton Guildhall to Winchester Cathedral. Along the way, she will raise money for the charity When You Wish Upon a Star UK, an organisation she passionately supports as an ambassador. The charity works to fulfil the dreams of terminally ill children, granting them once-in-a-lifetime wishes to bring joy during their difficult times. Daisy said, "My job is to fundraise as much as possible for the charity. Being a mum myself, raising money for terminally ill children was a no-brainer. It's wonderful what they do, and it's a really special charity." There is a wonderful picture of the front of our beautiful Winchester Cathedral, and in front of that, a very energetic Daisy doing a brilliant modern dance.
Objections mount over major plan for homes. More big changes have been proposed for the Winchester district as an application for new houses near Otterbourne has been submitted. The plans, submitted to Winchester City Council by Grassroots Planning on behalf of Barwood Land, propose 65 homes on fields to the rear of Cranbourne Drive. The developer is also proposing a 70-bed care home as well as public open space and playground. Councillor Warwick said that she believed the application to be speculative, caused by the Labour government's new housing targets. Another objection has come from Councillor Brian Lamming, who wrote, "This application is for land not in the local plan or indeed the emerging new plan for very good reasons. there is little infrastructure to accommodate this development and would cause traffic problems by increasing the number of vehicle movements existing onto the main road. Members of the public have also submitted written objections. Martin Brabham of Main Road wrote, "It is clear that the traffic is already an issue on Main Road, and the proposed development with 1 to 3 cars per house, delivery drivers, visitors to the care home would cause further congestion and also present a serious safety issue on Cranbourne Drive, which is often blocked by parked cars. This will present severe difficulties around the school and the safety risk as large trucks and increased traffic thunder past. Also, the village had flooding last year. This site will cause further issues. The mitigation plans are inadequate. Sid Tyler of Cranbourne Drive wrote, "Winchester District Council has already tabled an alternative site for additional housing in Otterbourne, namely on the land to the east of Main Road. We feel that this is more realistic solution to the need for additional housing as access to the proposed site is directly off Main Road." Otterbourne Parish Council also objected. Barwood Land has been approached for comment and the application can be viewed online at Winchester City Council's online planning portal. And there is a couple of pictures of Councillor Jan Warwick standing by Cranbourne Drive and another picture of Cranbourne Drive itself, and it's quite a narrow road.
And this is a report submitted by Donna Jones, who's the Police and Crime Commissioner, and she does that on a regular basis, and this report is entitled "Working to Make Our Roads Safer for Everyone." Road safety is an issue that affects everyone, from pedestrians and cyclists in rural areas to families driving through towns and cities. Since becoming Police and Crime Commissioner in 2021, I have been committed to ensuring that the Constabulary tackles the challenges posed by dangerous driving, illegal vehicles, and antisocial road use. One of the most pressing issues has been the illegal use of e-scooters, electric motorbikes, and e-bikes. While these vehicles can offer environmentally friendly travel, their misuse has become a blight on our communities. They've been used recklessly on pavements, leading to serious collisions, and alarmingly, they're increasingly linked to criminal activity. To address this, I signed a contract to enable the police to enhance their powers using existing legislation. This has given officers the ability to destroy any e-scooter or e-motorcycle that is being used in crime. The change in tactics is already paying off. In 2024 alone, 105 vehicles were seized, more than double the number in 2023. These including e-scooters, electric motorbikes, and modified e-bikes capable of dangerously high speeds. Many were linked to crimes involving drugs and weapons. By removing these vehicles from our streets, we're making our roads and communities safer. In addition, I've supported enforcement efforts to tackle illegal car meets, like the one recently disrupted in Winchester and Alton, where 9 vehicles were seized. These gatherings cause noise and disruption and often result in dangerous driving that puts innocent road users at risk. I'll continue to work with officers and communities to ensure we deliver safer roads across Hampshire.
Mitch in Gladiators quarter-final. A firefighter from Winchester has reached the quarter-finals of Gladiators on BBC One. Firefighter Andrew Mitchell was broadcast as one of the 4 contenders in the latest episode of the hit show last Saturday. Based at Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue in Winchester, Mitch took part in the filming of the revived game the revived game show in September, taking on the challenge of battling against athletes. The 40-year-old from Bournemouth said, "Every member of the watch brings a special skill set to the job, and I believe mine is my fitness and my strength. If we go into a house fire, I'm the one smashing the door down, squirting the wet stuff on the hot stuff. I'm the one who's getting big, heavy hydraulic cutting tools out and cutting cars up. I've been obsessed with fitness my whole entire life." And there's a brilliant picture of Mitch, who does indeed look incredibly fit and very strong. A great firefighter.
Hospice plea for support. A Hampshire hospice charity has joined the national campaign to raise awareness for the vital role of hospices play. Naomi House and Jack's Place Hospice for Children and Young Adults is one of more than 140 hospices taking part in This Is Hospice Care campaign, a national initiative facilitated by Hospice UK. The campaign aims to shift public perception and encourage people to leave a gift in their will to support their local hospice. This will ensure that these essential services can continue to provide their compassionate and specialist care for future generations. Mark Smith, Chief Executive at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "We are very excited to be part of a nationwide campaign to help raise the profile of hospices and the incredible work we do. As a registered charity, we rely heavily on donations to keep our doors open, and with only around 15% of our funding coming from the government. Gifts in wills are crucial to the survival and growth of hospices like ours. That's why we're asking our incredible supporters and community to consider leaving a gift to Naomi House and Jack's Place." Amanda Mahoney, senior fundraiser of Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Gifts in wills currently account for approximately 25% of our annual income. The generosity of our supporters enables us to provide outstanding hospice care for children, young adults and their families when they need us the most."
The Great Wall of China Trek to Aid Hospice. A Winchester charity has announced a fundraising trek along the Great Wall of China. Winchester Hospice is inviting people to join the charity on its latest overseas challenge following the success of last year's Sahara Desert Trek. Joe Westerman, the hospice's fundraising officer, said, "As one of the wonders of the world, the Great Wall of China features on the bucket list of so many people. This trek offers you the opportunity to explore a little visited part of it, guided by travel experts who help you immerse yourself in the culture of local communities. The team will leave Winchester on Saturday, November the 7th, 2026, and head to Beijing, where their trek will begin. Participants will be away for a week, returning on Sunday, November the 15th, 2026. And during the trip, trekkers will explore the wall through wild and remote landscapes with views of green rolling fields and mountain peaks." And this is accompanied by a photograph from, I assume, the previous trek, where there's, I don't know, about maybe 15 hardy souls that are trekking across the hot sand of the desert, but all looking fairly jolly about it, which is good.
Two charities appeal to the public for support. Critical public services across Hampshire have said they are becoming increasingly restricted and overwhelmed by budget cuts and dwindling financial support. Charities behind two vital services have spoken out after being forced to rely on charitable donations to keep services from closing for good. Winchester Hospice, based at Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Romsey Road, said its fundraising team has the colossal task of finding and securing £750,000 every year just to keep the lights on and doors open to those desperately in need. Joe Westerman, its fundraising officer, said donations bring much needed contributions to support our services to those in and around Winchester. The money raised from public donations goes to everything you could expect to see in a hospice, such as equipment, training staff, and ensuring the hospice is a welcoming environment for all. The hospice receives two-thirds of funding from the NHS, but needs to raise charitable donations for the rest. Though there are many fantastic fundraising campaigns that have no doubt profoundly helped the charity, it needs to raise at least £750,000 per year, something Joe said is becoming harder to do. Another service in Hampshire that depends heavily on public support is the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance. Currently based out of an airbase in Thruxton, Andover, with plans to move to Southampton Airport soon, this non-profit organisation has flown 13,374 missions.
Okay.
This non-profit making organisation has flown 13,374 missions. David Drew, chairman, said the charity not only relies on our pilots, doctors, paramedics and an ancillary staff, but also on our supporters. These comprise individuals, groups, grant-giving trusts and volunteers, all of whom make up the fantastic team that is so essential to our operations. The charity is currently aiming to raise £3.6 million to help with the relocation of its airbase and headquarters to a site near Southampton Airport.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors for selecting them and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Diana Brooke.
Goodbye.
Nor York.
Goodbye.
And Andrew Parkinson.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye and do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.